That means that the most successful person on earth is struggling with the exact same things that you're struggling with. They've just found a way to reflect and manage it. And there are a lot of people that are afraid to be alone with themselves. They will immediately reach out because they're scared to look inside themselves. And that lies right back into confidence, the confidence to be alone. That is a huge struggle.
Welcome to the Happy, Healthy Human Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Levitin. What do the happiest, healthiest humans all have in common? They are students of success. And my mission to help both you and I become the happiest, healthiest humans we can be, I have studied success at all levels. And after spending over a decade working in the field of human development and flourishing, I can tell you with certainty, success leaves clues. On this show, I investigate and explore the common clues and foundational principles that tie together success in all areas of life. Whether it's happiness, health, wealth, relationships, it's all a part of the human experience. By following these success clues and understanding the underlying success principles, you will find that success is not simply a possibility, it's guaranteed. Every Tuesday, I give you simple, straightforward action steps and tools using these clues and principles of success to help you become the happiest, healthiest human you can be. Massimo Rigotti is a distinguished speaker, addiction recovery advocate, and the author of the Flavors of Confidence book series. His life story is a compelling testament to the resilience of the human spirit, marked by a profound journey from the depths of addiction to the pinnacle of sobriety and confidence. Massimo is determined to transform the lives of anyone struggling with addiction through his innovative Sober Method, S-O-B-E-R. And even if you don't have substance issues yourself or have never even touched the stuff, we all know someone who has. It doesn't take 6 degrees of separation to get to someone whose life has been negatively affected by drugs or alcohol. And beyond that, Massimo's techniques can be used to break other negative habits like smoking, scrolling, or anything you wish you just had less of in your life. And that's why this stuff, it can be helpful for all of us, because we are all humans, and inside all of us are the same mechanisms that can potentially lead to addiction. So please enjoy this conversation with Massimo Rigotti.
What are flavors of confidence?
I love it. What a great question. I jokingly always say that I don't have any idea, but they sound delicious. But we have to take a little bit of a step back. So I met randomly a young lady on a beach in Destin, Florida in March of 2014 when I was at the absolute height of my addiction. And we connected immediately. Her name was Samantha Thomas. And she was herself struggling a little bit with her own confidence and was working on a self-portrait, which she aptly named Flavors of Confidence. What's unique about this is that when you stand back from this piece, it looks like a perfectly painted piece of artwork. But when you come up close, within about 3 or 4 inches, you notice that it's a collection of about 50,000 individual dots on a piece of paper. So the whole basis behind this is that we all operate in a collection of confidence bits, so that we're not always fully confident. We operate in some sort of flavor of it. And as we frame ourselves up in life, we find a way to operate a particular flavor of confidence. And sometimes that is too low. And so we struggle a lot with interacting with others. And so the whole goal here is to find a unique flavor that works for you.
That's definitely interesting. And I understand that concept, but I'm curious how you started to use the word confidence specifically when talking about sobriety, because confidence is something that I'm very passionate about. I coach people on confidence. It's something I think is extremely important, but I'm curious why that word specifically is something that you feel is necessary in the conversation.
Yeah, that's a great question. So if you look at everything in life, in the lens of confidence, I think that you really begin to understand the ability to be sober and sobriety. So often, if you look and you talk with addicts of all types, you will find that they struggle with confidence, like standing in a room and interacting with people, going up and talking to the girl at the bar, whatever those individual pieces in life, there is a need for the very common phrase we hear is liquid courage. And liquid courage is basically providing one with the diminished capacity to have the anxiety that you would normally have. But if you had natural confidence, you wouldn't need the liquid courage. So as I began to frame up my own path and how I was going to stay and remain sober, I recognized that for me, it was confidence. And then as I talked with others, it was very clear to me that confidence was this baseline requirement to be sober.
That's very interesting because I agree. I think that confidence is the root of everything. And you know, people often ask me, why do I coach people on confidence? Why do I have courses around self-confidence? And it's because of that. I think that it is at the root of everything. Everything that we want is really just to be more confident. We want to feel better in ourselves, in our capacity, in our abilities. And when we don't feel that, the opposite is, you know, anxiety or stress or something like that, because we don't feel that we're equipped to do the thing, handle the situation. As you said, at a bar, talk to the girl or the guy. So we need the liquid courage. But I think it goes beyond that. You know, I enjoy talking about addiction and substances because I do think a lot of people can relate, but it doesn't even have to be that. It's food is a big one. No. People are not confident in a room full of people at a party. So they stand by the snack table and they eat. People are not confident in the gym to know what to do or how to exercise. So they walk on the treadmill for 10 minutes and then they slink out without being seen by anyone. There's all these places where we see that when we're less confident, we have to buttress that with an outside thing. And if your thing is alcohol or drugs, probably worse. If it's food or scrolling, probably bad still, but maybe not as detrimental. But all of these things, it's to me a binary of it's either or. It's either I'm feeling confident and I'm equipped in my own capacity, or I have to try to what I feel like is getting that confidence from somewhere else. But really, it's just an illusion, right? So I know that you have, for your own sobriety and to help others, come up with your own method to try to instill confidence that you call the sober method. So could you, you know, break down what that is and how you use this to help people find their own flavor of confidence, to use your words?
Yeah. Just to quickly touch on a point you just made, is that the sober method, which I'm about to describe, completely handles all of these types of challenges. I have worked with people that have food addiction. I've worked with people with device addiction. Actually, I had somebody I worked with that was 83 years old with a device addiction. So that, I mean, like it impacts everybody. And all of it came back to confidence, to fitting in a particular situation. So I went to my phone rather than interacting with somebody that was directly in front of me. So the SOBER method, it stands for Stoic, Observe, Behavior, Execute, and Restore. And this is a holistic view and of your overall health, not just in mind. We're talking body and spirit. And it starts out with focusing on the reflection and the mindfulness that you get out of Stoicism. One of the big challenges that I heard from a lot of people that attended AA or other 12-step programs is that they were rooted in faith. And this is a challenge for a lot of people today. They don't want to go down that path, and then they leave a 12-step program without any real tools to help them. So mine is completely based in Stoicism. This is ancient philosophy. It's over 2,000 years old, and it really focuses in on taking these deep reflective looks at oneself and taking that stock in yourself. So as you move through the program, the initial is like you're we'll just take Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, for example. So you would take a verse out of one of the books, you would look and reflect on this, you would write about it, and then you would think about how that particular item reflected in your own life. And then that's when you move into the observe stage of the sober method. So you're looking at this particular thing. How does this relate to me? How, why am I doing this particular thing? What is it based in? And as you look at this and really do that reflection overall, you chart new behavior. Like, what am I going to do instead of this? So let's say that I walk into a meeting of a group of people, and my initial reaction is to immediately go for the bar. Okay, what would be better? Maybe I need to find somebody I know to tag along next to, so I gain confidence to interact in the group. So maybe that is my alternative. So this is the proposing of an alternative behavior in that behavior step. Other things that are going on in the behavior step is that we're charting out things that are necessary holistically to our body. Where's our diet at? What are we consuming? What's going in? One thing that's very interesting that a lot of people overlook is that a lot of depression and challenges that we have in the mental health space are actually directly in diet. And poor diet can have a tremendous impact on one's ability to actually maintain a normal thought process during the day. I personally am bipolar, so this is a big thing. I've managed to completely get myself off of any pharma medication, and I completely managed my bipolar today with diet and exercise, which is really attributed to the success of the overall program. And so again, in this step in the B, we're charting out, what is it going to look like for our exercise? Where is our health there? And it can be little things, just walking around the block, or maybe it's a jog every day. Maybe it's going to the gym and not slinking off that treadmill. Then we go into execute. So now we're really going to test everything we framed up. We're going to start our exercise routine. We're going to frame up some semblance of a better diet. And now we're going to test out this particular skill. So now we have an event. We go to the event. We tag along. I'm an event. I see Paul. There's Paul. Okay, Paul, help me out. I don't want to drink here. Let's, I'm just going to hang with you and maybe meet some new people. And so together we're hanging out, but then I get tempted and I go over and I grab a drink. Oh, this is a slip up. So now I'm in that execute step. I go back to observe. I take two steps back in the program. Why did I take that drink? And take that self-reflection. Like, did I have a feeling? Did I get nervous? What did I have anxiety? What caused that anxiety? So this is that deep introspective look. Chart out that new path, going back to B, look at how you're going to adjust, and then test again. And as you do that, you've perfected this particular item that you were challenged by. Then you move into restore. And restore is really that final step that we have in the 12-step programs, where we're like looking for that forgiveness and that reconciliation with the past. So in this program, in Sober Method, we're looking at, how did this particular behavior impact someone negatively in the past? For instance, maybe in the past you got drunk at a social event and you were rude to somebody. You never apologized to this person. So now you're going to any act that was impacted by this behavior you just corrected, you're not going to go out and seek that forgiveness from somebody else. And as you then complete that, you return back to the Stoic, you pick another reflective passage or something that you want to focus on yourself, and go through the same process again and again. And this program, unlike other 12-step programs, is focused on small incremental improvements. One of the largest challenges that everyone faces in their sobriety are the slip-ups, the relapse. And relapse is a lot easier to manage if you're making incremental strides. For instance, let's say that you normally drink a case of beer every night. Maybe we should shoot for drinking half a case of beer, and then maybe a six-pack, and then maybe it's a beer a night, and then boom, you're sober. That incremental gain is a lot easier to measure. And we live in a world of instant gratification, and setbacks when you're an addict are so harsh. And I find that that's a huge challenge in 12-step programs, because there's kind of this shame that I slipped up. And I found that in going to 12-step programs myself. And finally, the big thing in the Sober Method is stressed, is that you are what you say you are. So we walk around in these 12-step programs and we constantly say, hi, I'm Massimo and I'm an alcoholic. No, I'm not. I actually failed to get my 5-year PIN because I refused to say that line because I was 5 years sober. I'm not an alcoholic anymore. We teach in mental health advocacy all other facets of it, that you are what you say you are. It's self-affirming belief. So why on earth, in this one small space, do we continue to say, I am something that I'm no longer? I think it's a defeatist type of mentality and something that needs to be avoided. So that's the sober method kind of in a nutshell, very quickly.
There's so many pieces there that I really, really like, especially that last bit about, you know, the identity. And it's so true. They're always saying now that we shouldn't call people by their diagnosis, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Someone has diabetes, they're not a diabetic. Someone has autism, they're not autistic. And yet, as you said, we're supposed to, or someone who's in recovery is supposed to say, like, I'm an alcoholic. So I understand what they're going for and why the 12-step programs use it like that. But it's a very interesting thought that you brought up there. And I like, though, to go back to the beginning of the sober method, the stoic piece, because I'm curious if there's any specific stoic teachings or any bits of stoicism that you start people with, or that you enjoy, or that have been helpful for you in your training and in your personal path.
Yeah, I always recommend, because you can freely get it. It's the one that has no copyrights. There's no, you can go to Google Books and literally read multiple different variations of it, is Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. So for those of those listening who don't know who Marcus Aurelius was, he was a Roman emperor, and he was deeply reflective about the power that had been bestowed in him. And he wrote these, we believe anyway, no one knows for sure, but he probably wrote these to himself as a self-check on his power and what made sense in the in his time and place. And it carries forward well to today. So when you look at these and you read them, you know, an individual passage is him asking questions. Should he do this because he has the power to do it? Or should he do something else because it would be the better thing for all? And so these deeply reflective thoughts make you really think about where you are, who you are as an individual, and you know, give you kind of the capability to rewire yourself in your thinking.
Meditations is one of, I think, the most important, impactful books. I think that every person should read. I think that if every human read that as in school or as an adult, the world would probably be a better place. There's so much wisdom, as you said. It's, you know, kind of a diary, and it's just the wildest thing to, you know, this man who was literally a god, you know, at that time, right? Mm-hmm. To be the emperor of Rome, it was akin to being a god. He could literally, any thought that he wanted to happen would happen, could happen. And to reconcile with that level of power, level of responsibility, and then to see his inner thoughts and to see that it was much like what we go through. I think that's the most powerful thing about that type of stuff. When you read Meditations, he's struggling with the same things that you or I, or someone struggling with alcohol, or someone struggling with food, or someone struggling with anything. He's struggling. And that's the thing, you know, when I talk on this podcast, I always say happy, healthy, human, because this stuff is human stuff. That's why I don't mind talking to someone about addiction, even if everyone who's listening is not an addict. Because the things that we struggle with are still human stuff. Your thing might not be alcohol or cocaine or whatever else, but what you have struggled with, no matter what, is feeling less than in a certain situation, of feeling embarrassed or feeling a lack of confidence and wanting to go to something to cover that up, wanting to shrink into yourself and get away from that feeling. Now, whether you lean into a drug or not, that's up to the individual, but I think that we can all understand something about these feelings. And part of your method that I wanted to dig a little bit deeper on, that I want to maybe a little bit more explanation on why you chose this specifically, is about reflection. and how this plays into the overall concept of how you're helping people in the long run.
The reflection piece of this is more about understanding oneself. We live in a world today that has dramatically increased in pace, especially in the last, I would argue, 15 years of my life. The pace has doubled or tripled from my early life. Now, I'm old enough to have gone through every type of music capability possible, you know, beginning with records to 8-track to cassettes to CD. I mean, like, I've witnessed a lot of technologies just dramatically change, the dawn of the internet, but the iPhone and smartphones specifically, with the rise of social media, have greatly changed society and the way that we interact with others. And beyond that, it has diminished the quiet time. The time that we used to have where we would read, the time that we would just sit and talk to others, and the time that we were alone with our own thoughts. And there are a lot of people that are afraid to be alone with themselves. They will immediately reach out because they're scared to look inside themselves. And that lies right back into confidence, the confidence to be alone. That is a huge struggle. And I'll tell you, you know, as you were just responding a second ago, I was thinking about someone I met recently that I look up to. And I wanted to meet this person for a long time, and I'm not going to mention who it is. But in a conversation with him, I immediately recognized something that really shocked me. He wasn't confident about several things that he was doing. And so it really... It put everything in a new light for me and what and in the work that I'm doing, because it showed me that everybody is right here where I am, struggling. Just even though they appear that they have it all put together, it goes back right into Marcus Aurelius again. He was struggling with these same questions. He was the most powerful man on earth, and yet he was struggling internally with the same type of toil that all of us struggle with. And knowing that is a baseline. It flattens it for everybody. That means that the most successful person on earth is struggling with the exact same things that you're struggling with. They've just found a way to reflect and manage it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. It does completely. And it's, to me, it feels like a weight is lifted. That's why I always feel good to point this stuff out, because what we can't do is take away our own struggles. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole point. You are not flawed for struggling. It's not that something is wrong with you. I think that's how a lot of people feel. It's like, oh, this shouldn't be so hard. Or everyone else has it figured this out, but I'm not. So there's something wrong with me. I am somehow less than. And then, as you said, going back to how could that or would that affect someone's confidence? Well, if everyone else has this figured out, but I'm the one dummy who can't do it, of course I'm not going to be able to be confident. Of course I'm not going to feel good about my abilities or my place in the world. But when we see that that's a false reality, it's just not true. And what reality is that everyone is struggling, maybe in different ways, maybe in different areas. Your thing is your thing. My thing is my thing. But we all struggle in some way. And although it doesn't take away your struggle, it can at least lighten the load a little bit to go like, okay, again, this isn't a flaw in the system. This isn't a mistake. This is literally how it's built and how it's supposed to go. And that's a big part of my messaging in this podcast. And when I coach with people and when I talk with people or when I speak on stage, that's like the main point that I'm always trying to get to is like, it is not that you are broken because you are struggling. Struggle is built into it, just like waves come and go, just like the sun rises and sets. That's just the way that things are. So acceptance is a big part of it. And that's really what I want to teach. So I'm curious with you, with your sober method, with your books that you've written, what makes you so passionate about spreading this message? What made you want to choose this path to be the colors of confidence guy and the sober method guy?
Well, that's kind of a tragic story. So remember, Samantha introduced me to the whole Flavors of Confidence concept and built this program around. So on August 1st of 2020, Samantha was murdered by a drunk driver. And that really changed my overall thinking. Before she died, she was encouraging me to write a book about my life and about my struggle and how I had come to fall from the pinnacle of success to homeless and then to remake myself, because it's a compelling story that others need to hear, and it would encourage others. And I was reluctant before she passed away, but as soon as she did, I resolved that, okay, I'm going to write this book. And then after writing the book, I had the opportunity to testify at her sentencing of her murder trial this March in Mobile, Alabama. And when I was driving back to Lincoln, I was just outside of Nashville. And the only way I can describe it is like a bolt of lightning just, you know, outside of the city, driving through those huge cliffs that are on either side of you. And I just, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. This is the best thing for her legacy. I'm going to go out and spread this message to others, to try to do some good out of something that was so tragic, and honor her legacy. And so that's what I've done. I got back to Lincoln. I sat down. I started writing my second book, which is The Sober Method. My first book, Flavors of Confidence, was primarily my memoir, with a little bit on how I did it at the end in the last chapter. And the second book, Sober Method, is just the method. And so that's why I'm so passionate about it, because, you know, unfortunately, somebody came and took her life and took her from me and from the world. She was an amazing human. And this is the only way I can carry that legacy forward.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that and that happened, obviously, but it's very powerful that you've taken something that is, by all purposes, the worst thing that could happen, and turned it into something positive to then spread a positive message to others and help others. It is, as you said, the best possible thing that you could do for her legacy. So I applaud you for that. And when you talked about your sober method, one of the things that I really liked about it is that it's a loop. You know, when I teach my habit building and behavior change model, I teach it as a loop as well. So awareness, cool. Education, action, and it always comes back around to the beginning, which is awareness again, because that's what this stuff is. We don't ever reach an end point. We don't ever get to say like, okay, boom, done. Like, I'm good. And then that's it. And something I've heard you talk about in the past is continuous improvement.
Yes.
And, you know, we're always working to get better. And while I theoretically on one hand agree with that, you know, there's Kaizen, the Japanese concept of continuous improvement. And yet on the other side of that, I also struggle with the fact that, is that just that the hustle mentality? I'm like, go, go, go. And we have to always be grinding. And is there a negative to the fact of like, can't I just chill for some time? Like, can't I just be, do I always have to be getting better? And like, isn't there a time where I get to rest? And I hold both of those views inside of me at the same time, and they're kind of conflicting. So I'm just curious, how do you see those things interplaying? Like, isn't there a point where, yes, continuous improvement, but continuing forever, when does it end?
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy. You bring up a very good point. I mean, on one hand, you're like, oh man, I'm grinding every day. And on the other, you're like, yeah, I mean, like, I'm good. Why would I do anything else? Certainly, there is the argument that you could slough off. But what I have seen myself as I'm now approaching my eighth year sober is that I actually am passionate about finding that next thing to improve. It's almost, I'm going to be very truthful here. In years like 4 and 5, I was like, oh, do I have to keep going? This is just so labor intensive. I mean, I'm good. I'm going to be sober. It's no problem. But I kept going. I pushed on through that. And as I pushed through it, then it became more of a passion project in terms of like, oh, wow. Hey, look at this. I never realized that I was doing this, you know? And then you really like hone in on the finer points of your existence. And then it's so rewarding to look back and say, hey, I no longer do that anymore. And so that's what I really encourage anyone that I work with or talk to about it, is that being sober is really just practicing your sobriety every day of your life. I mean, you know, and so if you were in sports, you would practice every day. I mean, do professional athletes eventually go, oh, why am I doing this? Yeah, a lot of them do. But the ones that are incredible, the ones that are in the Hall of Fame, the ones that we cheer for and have their jerseys, those are the guys and gals that are out there that never quit. They're just like, oh, you know what? I could have got that goal, you know, that if I had just, you know, turned my foot to, I'm struggling with that forever. Well, you can take the defeatist approach and say, well, I'm never going to get any better, so that's as good as I'm going to get. And that would be the one side. Or you could focus on greatness and say, well, maybe if I put an extra hour in the gym on the strength of my right foot for the next month or year, I will be able to take that shot. And that's really where it comes down to. Yeah, you're good, but do you want to be great or awesome?
As you said, that is the differentiator between the cream of the crop, the top of the top, and the average, is that little bit of extra effort. And just as I'm thinking about this, as you're speaking and going over this conversation in my head, I also go back to what you mentioned, which was actually a phrase that I use word for word in my coaching, which is small incremental change. Incremental change over time is what creates large change. I think a lot of people think it has to be this huge thing. But when I come to continuous improvement, it actually can't. It can't be this overwhelming, looming, huge thing, because that's when we give up. As to use your example, the person who's drinking a case of beer a day, when you're like, I'm going to quit cold turkey, sometimes that's too big of a change to wrestle with. And that's why people don't do it. Or they try to do it and they do it for a little while, but then they can't keep up with it and then they fall off. Whereas the small incremental change, one less beer, two less beers, three less beers, all of a sudden, through continuous improvement, the compound interest, the compound effect adds up to a huge change over time. So I think looking at it like that, that yes, it's about continuous change, continuous improvement. I do believe that the universe is entropy and what isn't growing is dying. And that if you aren't working on yourself, you're actively getting worse. It's either get better or get worse. There's no middle ground. But that doesn't mean that you have to become an expert tomorrow. Instead, as cliche as it sounds, read one page a day, listen to one podcast, get your steps in, whatever it is. It's this small change that layered over time, over weeks, months, years, decades, creates the big change that we're going for, which is the life change and the sustainability that we're looking for. Because no one wants to do something and then go back to what they were doing before. If you're creating a change, it's worth maintaining. And if it's not worth maintaining, then why are you even doing it in the first place? No one wants to quit drinking for a little while. No one wants to start exercising for a few months. We have to do this in a way that's sustainable. So the last question that I have for you, Massimo, is the same question that I ask every guest on this show, is that if you had one action step to leave listeners with as soon as this episode ends, as soon as they take their headphones out, to start living a happier, healthier life, what would it be?
Sit down and ask yourself, how you could incrementally change yourself for the positive. What does that look like? And secondarily, what would it look like 3 years from now if you took that step? And then I'd recommend you go pick up a copy of Meditations and start reading.
I agree. I like the part about thinking about what would your life look like 3 years from now if you did that consistently. I think that that's an important thing. It's both. When I do goal setting with clients, it's having the big goal, the 3 years from now goal, the 5 years from now goal, but also having the daily incremental goals. You can't have either one. If you just have the big goal, it just becomes this thing that's like, well, yeah, who doesn't want to be skinny or rich or sober or whatever it is? And if you just have the daily goal of like, I'm just going to drink one less beer today, it's like, where is that even taking me? But when you have both the incremental small goals to actually do the thing, and then the big out there goal to motivate you, I think that's when we're able to see real success. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I do think people should go buy Meditations, go pick it up. It's like you said, you can find it for free online. So last thing before I let you go, Massimo, is just, I have all your links in the show notes. I have your books as well for people who want to check it out. I actually recommend reading books like this. I read books on addiction science and sobriety all the time, even though I do not struggle with this stuff, because again, the reason I like having conversations like this is because addiction science is just human science. Even if you don't think that you're an addict, there's something that you struggle with doing that you don't want to do. For me, it's scrolling on my phone. And for some people, it's eating. But there's something that you do and you're like, why do I keep doing this thing even though I don't want to do it? So understanding sobriety and understanding the way that our brain works with substances can be very powerful. So go check out Massimo's books, check out his website and Instagram and stuff in the show notes. But Massimo, if people want to connect with you, where's the best place for them to find you to contact you and learn about more of what you're doing?
Absolutely. Well, I just launched across all socials at Sober Method. I put out daily TikToks. I go through the Sober Method during the week, spelling out sober with tips during the weekdays. And then I have reflection on Sunday and motivation tips on Saturdays. So if you just want it in little pieces, I do interact and comment and reply to people. If you want to reach out directly, X is the best platform for me to reach and talk to people directly.
Amazing. So yeah, check out TikTok, check out X, Twitter, whatever the hell it is, and go connect with Massimo. Massimo, thank you so much for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode or got value from it, you can support the show by sharing it with a friend and giving them the gift of a happier, healthier life. You can also leave a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps boost the show on those platforms so more people can discover it and we can all grow together. I'll see you back here every Tuesday and Thursday morning. And until then, stay happy, stay healthy.